Welcome to the OMFIR podcast.
Hi, I'm Ellie Groves, Deputy Director of Programming at OMFIF, and today we will be discussing the transition to remote working and impact on businesses, people and the economy. I'm joined by Carl Frey, Director of the Future of Work Programme at University of Oxford, and Susan Lund, partner of McKinsey & Company and leader of the McKinsey Global Institute. Both have advised multinational organisations such as the IFC and OECD on the future of work and technological innovations. So we're very pleased to welcome you both here for this OMFIF podcast. First of all, I want to start by asking what impact the COVID-19 crisis has had on the acceleration of remote working. Perhaps if, Carl, you could start by giving a general overview on this, please.
Sure. So just to give you an idea of the magnitude, so before the pandemic in the European Union, roughly 4 to 5% of the labor force reported some hours worked remotely. And that was essentially flat for two decades up until the pandemic. Same in the United States, around 5% of the workforce reporting working some hours from home or remotely. During the peak in the US in April, 60% of the workforce worked remotely. And that then went down slightly during the summer to around 30%. It's now up around 50% again. So we've really seen a tenfold increase in remote working during this pandemic. So the acceleration is very significant indeed.
Thank you. Susan, can you also give some colour to this? Maybe could you also answer if you think if this trend would have happened without the pandemic, or you think that actually the pandemic has, rather than accelerated this trend, made it happen in and of itself?
I think the pandemic was really a big nudge. The possibility and indeed the reality of telecommuting has been with us for the last 20 years, but as Carl noted, it was a very small percentage of the workforce that routinely telecommuted or worked remotely. The pandemic forced everyone to try it, and many people who would not have tried it, and many businesses who would have thought that they couldn't manage their workforce effectively, were forced to try it. And now here we are, 9 or 10 months later, and many companies have found, and many individuals have found, that actually it works quite well in some situations. And so, therefore, we think that some hybrid forms of partial remote working will continue after the pandemic, but I think there's a difference between what can be done remotely in a pinch versus what can be done truly effectively remotely compared to being in person. And that's what companies, I think, will be focused on going forward after the pandemic ebbs.
I want to follow on with you, Susan, and ask what were the main barriers that countries have faced in regards to remote working, and what solutions can they employ to remove these barriers, and also businesses. So perhaps that's a twofold question, looking at what businesses had to face and where did government step in and perhaps support and help those challenges, or where did businesses have to create those solutions themselves in the face of the COVID-19 crisis, which obviously happened very swiftly.
It did. So the first barrier, of course, was just the technology. For businesses, video conferencing was around, but it wasn't really used very much. People weren't comfortable with it. There was a sense that it couldn't replicate in-person experiences. And I think that we found over the course of the pandemic that actually video conferencing can be quite effective, particularly for small, relatively small groups of people meeting face-to-face. From a government perspective, though, of course, this means that you need widespread broadband access at affordable prices for large parts of the population. I think that was the main barrier. And then different ways of working. I mean, some of the experiences with telecommuting in the past very famously failed. So Marissa Mayer, the then CEO of Yahoo, famously required everyone to go back into the office after they had spent several years allowing employees to work from home because they found that productivity had fallen. I think one of the things we're learning during this pandemic is how to work more productively and effectively in a remote setting. So how do you run a meeting differently? I think there's more focus on communication and follow up on what was agreed. There are new tools for sharing documents so everyone can see the latest, or talking to each other, communication apps like Slack for communicating within teams. So we also have new technologies. And I think that one of the differences in the pandemic is that companies are actively experimenting with this to make remote working and telecommuting, rather than just being an individual choice, something that is integrated into the ways of working and therefore effective and productive.
And Carl, same question, but also perhaps a little bit more of a flavor on the data protection and the data security, especially around governments having to work remotely and how this consideration has been a key challenge that's had to overcome, and whether, I know there was a lot of work in the years beforehand around remote working and data security. At the beginning of the pandemic, there was a lot of questions around the hacking of various technologies for conference call technologies and how quickly these needed to be resolved. So the same thing around the barriers that companies face, but also around the data security of moving so quickly to remote working.
Sure. So first of all, I think it's important to remember that we had a similar discussion back in the 90s when futurists like Edwin Toffler, Francis Cairncross, and journalists like Tom Friedman all predicted the end of the office and even the end of cities. But of course, back then, we didn't have many of these technologies that Susan described. We didn't have the cloud. We didn't have Skype. We didn't have video conferencing technology. All of those things have now come together. But many of these technologies we actually had for a long time, and sort of from a technological point of view, it was feasible to work remotely even 10 years ago. We already had Dropbox, right? And Skype was obviously founded, I think, 7 years before then. So the technologies have been in place. I think one of the key hurdles have been actually the switch and the sunk costs related to that as such. I mean, getting an entire organization to work remotely is a vast sunk cost, and it's a costly experiment. People need to invest in remote office space. Not everybody have a spare office room at home. People need to invest in better webcams. People need to invest in desks and other equipment. And firms need to invest in software and cybersecurity technology as well. So it was just sort of very significant sunk costs related to this. And what the pandemic did is really forced many businesses to invest in that. We need to remember at the same time, though, that countries are facing very different barriers to remote work. So I spoke to a company in Indonesia a couple of weeks ago, for example. They had to resource all of their workers back to the office again because broadband connection was simply not good enough and very few people could work effectively from their home. And the World Bank has estimated that in certain countries, you know, 1 in 30 workers are able to work remotely. In the US, it's maybe 1 of 2. So the differences across countries are very significant, and the barriers to remote work are also quite significant.
What effects remote working has had on workers and businesses? What can we expect in 2021? So I think that was an interesting point you made there, Carl, about the difference between different countries and access. It was building on what Susan said around actually the government's key stumbling block was ensuring broadband for the whole population. So it'd be interesting to go back to you, Carl, and expanding that point around what do you think the trends will be in 2021 if we take the pandemic out of it, let's say, so post-pandemic? And do you think that we will see more working from home and more flexibility, or will we see a return back to the pre-pandemic scenario?
Well, given that all of the investment has been made already to switch to remote work and that many businesses and employees have found out that it works pretty well, I think it's very likely to stick. Most people I've been talking to and most surveys as well, I think, suggest that when people work in an industry or in a job that can be done remotely, they are likely to work from home 2 to 3 days a week, but probably not more than that. And I think the reason for that is that Most studies show that people can work quite productively from home, but people that work from home all of the time, they do significantly reduce their promotion prospects. And if you think so down the line, if everybody can choose to work 5 days remotely, it's most likely going to be people that live far away from the office, and it's most likely to be people that are very religious or women with young children. So there are particular groups in the labor market that are likely to choose that. And if their promotion prospects suffer as a consequence of that, businesses are going to find that they have a quite significant diversity problem down the road. So I think that it's definitely going to be a hybrid model. And I think businesses will have to force people to actually come into the office a couple of days a week. Secondly, while I think there's evidence that it's been good for productivity, I think it's bad for innovation. And I think most people that have experienced remote work for the past 10 months have noted that you don't get the best ideas by sitting in front of your computer screen. The water cooler moments that happen in offices don't happen at distance. There are no sporadic interactions. Somebody needs to set up a meeting. And I think there's a reason that, you know, knowledge industries have always clustered from the days of Renaissance Florence to Victorian Birmingham and Manchester to 20th century Detroit to Silicon Valley and Seattle today. And that is because we benefit, or businesses benefit, from the proximity and the sporadic interactions and the knowledge spillovers that happen when people meet and interact. So I think for innovation, the pandemic has rather been a rather disastrous thing. So a mix between remote work and in-person interaction, I think, is going to be the sort of hybrid model we'll be looking at in 2021.
Thank you. And Susan, if you could also offer your thoughts on this and also perhaps touch on the point that Carl made around the diversity in businesses and that barrier to promotion, but also perhaps also link it with whether remote working has supported some of those childcare difficulties, although we've read a lot that the childcare still falls on the women. There's a lot of evidence to suggest this, especially within the UK when they've done research into this, and how that's actually impacted on the working day, especially while the schools are closed. But perhaps when schools go back and therefore we're in a level of normality, how you think that that might support the flexible working for diversity on both sides there.
Yes, well, I would agree with Carl that what we're likely to see over the next year is moving from the situation we're in today, where everyone who can work remotely is doing it 100% of the time, to a hybrid model where people are in the office for a few days a week and they may be working from home a few days a week. And this is where I think companies are being very thoughtful about which activities actually benefit from being in person. So complex negotiations might benefit from sitting across the table from someone. Certainly onboarding new employees and maintaining the culture in your organization is important to do in person. Critical decision meetings among executives or critical feedback meetings and coaching and mentoring are better in person. Innovation and brainstorming, these are the types of activities that benefit from people being in the office together. On the other hand, if you're doing something on your computer, not interacting with anyone else, that can be done equally well from home. So when we look at that, we say there are probably only 20 to 25% of the workforce in Europe and the US that could work from home 3 to 5 days a week. Now, that's still a large increase compared to where we were before the pandemic, but it's much less than what we're seeing today. So I think we will move to this hybrid model. I think it's also important to note, and we haven't talked about it yet, that the vast majority of jobs in the economy are done in person. That really we're talking about office workers, white collar workers in an office setting that are most likely able to work remotely, or perhaps medical professionals enjoying telemedicine. We see it with in some online teaching and fitness classes, but the vast majority of work in any economy actually requires physical presence at the job, either because you're caring for a patient, you're using specialized equipment in a laboratory or manufacturing, and so that necessitates being in person. So I think it would be wrong for any listener to take away the notion that somehow everybody's working from home. Even during the pandemic, of course, all the millions of essential workers are still going to the office and in manufacturing, you know, plants are still running. So what we're really talking about here is office-based work.
Carl, how has the UK stood out from other countries when adapting to remote working? And what improvements would need to be made for the approach? And which country has done it best? And I kind of want to also ask, could you give one piece of advice to governments worldwide that are looking at the change of workforce, obviously been accelerated by COVID? You've done a lot of work on the future of jobs and how we manage and look at the technological innovations within the workforce and how that will impact jobs for the future. If you could give them one piece of advice, what would it be or what has it been? And then as exactly kind of my other question, which was, how has the UK stood out from other countries when adapting to the remote working? Have they done it well and or not?
Well, I think it's hard to evaluate at this stage already how well countries have adjusted to the pandemic in terms of shifting towards remote work. We do have, you know, some estimates of the share of the population working remotely, but we don't have much in the way of how productively those fractions of the population are working remotely and how well it has worked in different countries. Clearly, the UK as service-led economy, and as Susan rightly pointed out, right, we shouldn't pretend that, you know, the majority of jobs can be done remotely. They can't. And that's what also drives most of the differences between countries. Countries that specialized in financial services, in insurance, in professional services, in education, these are the type of jobs that can easily be done remotely. And obviously, the UK stands out as one of the leading countries in precisely those industries. So we would expect the United Kingdom to do quite well during this pandemic for those precise reasons. I think one of the key challenges that countries are facing coming out of this pandemic has to do with other technological changes that are going on at the same time. And so one of the key drivers of job creation in the past couple of decades have actually been, there's been a lot of low-skilled service type of jobs being created, you know, people serving coffee, people serving food, receptionists, and that sort of thing. If we look at survey evidence of how people expect that they will behave even after this pandemic, there are good reasons to believe that people are more likely to want to interact less with people in person for those type of services, which means that we are likely to see an acceleration in automation affecting precisely those type of jobs. And we saw this, it must be noted, during the Great Recession as well. Routine jobs disappeared very rapidly. Other jobs disappeared rapidly as well, but they came back. And this routine jobs that can easily be specified in computer code and readily automated, they never really rebound. And the reason for that is that businesses decided to invest in automation technologies instead of rehiring. And secondly, also, after a recession where you have a lot of cash-strapped consumers, what you do see is that people tend to opt for cheaper goods and services. And when people opt for cheaper goods and services that have been produced using more automation technology, they increase the overall level of automation in the economy. So when people go and buy their food at McDonald's rather than going to a restaurant, the level of automation in the economy increases. So I think what governments need to do coming out of this pandemic is really to stimulate demand. I think putting money in people's pockets, making sure that they can consume, and having programs in place that help people transition from sectors that are going to be most adversely affected by this. I think one of the key problems at this stage is we're not quite sure at this stage which those sectors are. We don't know how rapidly the arts are going to rebound. We don't know how rapidly restaurants and other type of in-person services are going to rebound. So I think we need to monitor the situation very carefully. But the most important tasks facing governments is to keep up demand and help people transition.
Susan, same question to you. And also, what would you suggest your piece of advice to businesses who are looking at the future of work and looking at the impact that this pandemic has had on the economy and also their bottom line into how they should be looking at the support for their employers and also this change to remote working?
So I guess I'll focus on the potential impact on some of the urban centers in the largest cities. A trend that we saw over the last 10 years before this pandemic was the concentration of both jobs and people in the most dynamic, biggest cities. And we documented that trend at the McKinsey Global Institute in both Europe and in the United States. So the largest, most dynamic places created a disproportionate share of employment growth. Now with remote work, that has a potential to either slow down or even reverse. I think that even if large cities don't leave out, if you suddenly have 20 to 25% of the workforce who isn't in the urban center every day, it has profound implications for our public transit systems, for food service in those downtown areas, for retail shops, and you see a big shift in consumer spending. We've seen it certainly over the course of 2020. So a lot less spending on wardrobes for going to the office and transportation for going to the office, but more on home office equipment or food at home or in your residential neighborhood. So I think that we're going to have to think about what the future of urban centers looks like. Now, there's a question mark over whether you may see workers move even further afield or companies setting up satellite offices in smaller cities, in what we call tier two and three cities, out of the most expensive, densely populated places. Over the course of 2020, you saw both commercial office space vacancies rise most in the most expensive, biggest cities like San Francisco, New York in the United States, and London and Paris in Europe. And you saw rental prices for homes and apartments go down the most. And you saw some pickup in the smaller cities. Now, whether that continues after economies reopen, we'll have to wait and see. But that would be potentially a profound shift. The upside would be spreading diversity to more parts of countries and economies that have been left behind over the last decade. I think as we make this shift, governments will need to think hard about digital infrastructure and broadband and about how to ensure that prosperity is shared across the economy. For businesses, they're realizing that there is sometimes a toll of remote work, certainly during the pandemic, and finding new ways to make sure that workers do feel connected, that they feel valued, that they can replicate some of the positive aspects of being together in person when people are remote. And as we do go back to the office, thinking about how to really bring everyone along and making sure, I think 2021 could be a time when a lot of people will be eager to go back and see the friends and acquaintances they have in the workplace. And companies are thinking about how to strengthen those bonds after a year of interacting through video conferencing only.
Thank you so much. And thank you both for joining us. I think we've covered a lot of ground, and I especially think that what's come through for me, and I hope you'll agree, is that the remote working has a lot of side effects to it. It's especially in the impact on the wider economy. Susan, your point around the city, the urban areas, and the shift to potential shift towards different areas within countries for uptake in rents and office space, but also for you, Carl, what you were discussing around the change in consumer behavior and how to get that back once we move to back to some semblance of normality. But I think what you were both saying at the start is the COVID crisis has created an extreme shift, but we won't ever really go back potentially to what we saw before of 5 days in the office, 9 to 5, but actually some hybrid scenario which works for both businesses and for employees, but also, and for workers, but also kind of how to balance that with ensuring that nobody gets left behind and that businesses still focus on diversity. And Susan, your point around bringing everyone together this year and really looking at that togetherness and the importance of that going into 2021 and beyond, hopefully we won't lose that. Thank you for listening to the OMFIF podcast.